We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
We start with an announcement from Look Local magazine, read by Zeb Soans.
After many months of negotiation, Ecclesfield Parish Council have now been able to set Monday the 2nd of March as the date for the opening of the public toilets in Chapeltown. This will be a great relief to many people.
And our thanks to Anne Ashworth in Sheffield for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Sarah Pascoe. On my left, journalist Sam Leith and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, whose lobbying led to them being lobbed out?
This is Rifkin Strawgate. I know I should be outraged, but I'm not sure I can be bothered, really. Just can't muster the energy. I've seen so many of these programmes now where some boastful MP sits at the far end of a weirdly long table and talks us through his rate card. And, you know, it's always virtually a standard format now. You know, you get a middle-aged man and you put him in a room with a couple of young women. You wait till he starts to show off and then you offer him some easy money. And, I mean, Jack Straw, at one point, he was bragging about something and you heard a woman's voice go, "Wow." How many times in his life will Jack Straw have heard a woman say, "Wow"? I mean, he didn't stand any chance at all, did he? I mean, in fact, I mean, that programme shouldn't have been called Dispatches. A more honest title would be Shooting Fish in a Barrel. Yeah, very slow fish in a very small barrel.
But the weird thing is, I don't think people have been focusing on Jack Straw very much, have they? They've been focusing much more on Malcolm Rifkin. And it's the weirdest thing, he's so dreary, Jack Straw, that even scandals slide off him. He's like, it's like beige Teflon, isn't it?
His was much more egregious, really, because he actually said that he had manipulated Ukrainian government policy. And he said, because he works for a commodities firm that was trying to trade in sugar and the Ukrainian government was stopping him, and he said he changed Ukrainian government policy through charm and menace. I thought, well, that would be tricky, considering Jack Straw is neither charming nor menacing.
And there are some quite menacing people involved in the Ukraine.
Exactly. He must have got onto his mates in the State Department and got the bloke whisked off to a nearby CIA black site for enhanced trade negotiation. But it is to do with, if you get men of a certain age and you put attractive young women in front of, I mean, you know, if you sent a beautiful...
Men of any age.
Yeah. Men of any age.
Let's just clarify
men
that
of
first.
Any age, and you put beautiful young women in front... I mean, if they sent a beautiful young Chinese woman to laugh at my jokes, I'd say, yes, I can get you Nicholas Parsons' autograph.
When Malcolm Rifkin was caught on camera saying, "You'd be surprised how much free time I have," I thought, no, I'm not. You're a man. Honestly, seriously, if you're bored, Malcolm, come over. I have a mound of ironing that you could do.
Well, also, if you're a Tory MP, then by nature you have less work to do because you have fewer poor people in your constituency.
That's true.
And there's not much for you to do. I mean, Malcolm Rifkin's mailbag will mainly be people saying, "So much for climate change, my crocuses are bang on schedule." People complaining about ethnic minorities in the Archers and things like that. So he won't have much to do.
Do you not think it's sweet, though, that Jack Straw has suspended himself from the Labour Party? Do you think he's at home on the naughty step, counting the hours until he allows himself to play with his Nintendo again?
One anomaly that did strike me was that these men are being roundly condemned, you know, maybe rightly so, but they're being condemned for accepting pretend money for pretend services from pretend dodgy foreign people. Whereas every day of the year, Tony Blair accepts real money from real dodgy people and nothing ever happens.
I think Rifkin's mistake was claiming that the MP's salary of £67,000 was not enough for a professional person to live on. And I think that's fair, because the price of professional people's milk is exorbitant. And professional people's toilet paper is just ridiculous.
Do they milk professional people, then?
They do.
Blimey, is it organic, though?
It's free range. And undercover sting in which MPs Jack Straw and Malcolm Rifkin appeared to offer their lobbying services to a bogus Chinese firm for cash has opened up a wider debate about whether MPs should be banned from having second jobs. Whilst being secretly filmed, Jack Straw admitted to lobbying European ministers, whilst Rifkin said he had access to numerous ambassadors due to his second job as a Ferrero Rocher delivery boy. Despite earning £67,000 a year as an MP, Rifkin described himself to the undercover reporters as self-employed, a statement which will soon be true. 2 points to Andy. Sarah, whose radio appearance left them? Lost for words, this, this week.
It's Natalie Bennett.
Yeah.
Did I mention I've got a cold?
Bless.
Yes, bless indeed. I'll tell you what, and this is the thing, obviously it's really painful. I think for any human being, you're glad it's not you, and we've all actually probably been in a similar situation where we really, really want to be good at our job and we're not. No one can say, oh, I've never had a bad day at work. I would rather someone didn't know something and that be appallingly obvious than all of the BS we get from all of the others when they don't know an answer to a question.
Yeah.
And they just shout it confidently and we all know they're lying to us. So from a human aspect, I didn't enjoy it, but I think it's a sign of how important it is that we have the Green Party discussing with the others.
I agree, but honestly, it did make a post-match interview with a footballer look like a lost Arthur Miller player. It's a Green Party, for goodness sake. How hard can it be to answer everything with the words solar panel and hemp?
Yeah. I'm sure she wasn't just doing it for a bet. I'll win 20 quid, all I'll do is just go on and have a policy, which is completely uncosted, tell we're going to pay for it with a tax, which is also completely uncosted, and just see what happens. Busk it. And obviously, actually, it's a brilliant idea, because they've been desperately trying to get on these election debates, haven't they?
Yeah.
And now all the TV producers are going to go, we'll have the Greens on, it'll be really funny.
Hey, now I believe you. Yeah, it's a cunning media ploy. Like, Nigel Farage just is great in the newspapers. What can we do?
We'll just be the people who you really, really want to hear on air, not having a clue what they're talking about.
Farage has car crash interviews all the time. If Natalie Bennett had a fag, a pint and a barber jacket, she'd have gotten away with it. He'll say, oh, I don't know anything about our policies. Have we got that policy? Oh, it's terrible. I'll expel that policy at once. Expel all the members. I don't know what I think. What do I think? Did I say the NHS should be privatised? Did I say that? Oh, well, it shouldn't. Possibly. I don't know. Who am I talking to? You're a Labour voter? Yes. If you're a Labour voter, I believe in renationalising the commanding heights of the economy. Are you a Conservative? I believe in flogging the poor. What do you want me to say? I want to be Prime Minister. I'll say anything you want.
There's been quite a lot of stuff, actually, about different personalities gearing up towards the election. I particularly enjoyed Conservative MP David Tredinnick. Does anybody remember
that? He gave an interview to Astrology Now magazine or something like that. Maybe Astrology in the Future magazine, I'm not sure.
It's called Stars in Their Eyes.
Yeah, you think you could have seen it coming, Stars in Their Eyes, in which he said, well, you know, people who criticise astrology and think that it's of no importance in the medical profession are bigots and racists and they don't really understand it well enough, and he would say that he's a Capricorn. And he said that homeopathy and astrology were very, very important in medical policy and they should have a place in the NHS and they'd save us lots of money.
He said he could help solve NHS overcrowding. he's on the Health Committee and Science and Technology Committee and he believes that homeopathy could cure HIV, tuberculosis, malaria, urinary infections, diarrhoea, skin eruptions, diabetes, epilepsy, eye infections, intestinal parasites, cancer and gangrene, amongst other conditions.
I've never met anybody who's got all of them.
No. Did anybody ask me about David Cameron?
Oh, he did an interview for a woman's magazine.
Yeah.
Is it this one? He talks about it like it's a great thing, about how when he goes shopping with his wife, he gets locked in a changing room and she passes trousers underneath. It's like, if you can't pick your own trousers, why are you running the country? Like, that's the simplest thing. I think it's supposed to make you feel like, oh, I really like him. He lets his wife do his shopping. It's like, grow up. Walk into a shop and buy something. And also, I think the shops that he mentioned were Gap and M&S. And what's so great, you know, like how when Kate Middleton buys a dress and it sells out instantly, David Cameron is the exact opposite. Gap has been empty ever since, apart from a pigeon who accidentally set off the automatic doors and went in and then found out David Cameron's shop's there and flew off.
My favourite, Ed Balls. Anybody know what we learned about Ed Balls this week?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well, he was on a radio show and they started talking about their sex lives. And he...
Always ends
yeah,
well,
I know. I think I'll just stop there.
No, you have to say it. He describes sex with him as a long, slow burn.
Oh, fed up of having to choose between sex or cystitis? Choose Ed Balls!
Going back to the original story, Green Party leader Natalie Bennett gave an excruciating interview on LBC this week when grilled on her party's election campaign just before its launch. Bad news, she's done her chances of being Prime Minister no good, but good news, she's now the most anticipated guest on Just a Minute ever. Bennett used the interview to talk about inequality and social justice as opposed to their usual environmental policies. Sometimes... just stick to what you know, Natalie. Honestly, did you learn nothing from Mike Reed hearing a Calypso track and thinking, I'll give that a whirl? So 2 points to Sarah. Jeremy, whose perks won't be pensioned off?
Oh, old people. Cameron is buttering up the Grey vote in the run-up to the election. And the amount's fairly small. The pensioner benefits that Labour wants to take away from wealthy pensioners, it won't raise very much money, but it's a symbolic thing that rich pensioners shouldn't have these free things like bus passes or TV licences or winter fuel pens. And the Tories are saying, no, we'll keep them on principle. And it doesn't really, you know, it's not going to matter to rich pensioners either way. People who've worked hard and saved, not everybody does. Some people have been criminals all their lives. Some people work in public relations. Some people are feckless. Some of us arse about on the wireless and get money for it. You know, some of us don't save anything because we forget and we can't be bothered and we don't really expect to last a night anyway. This constant sense that we've all got to be these virtuous, thrifty people squirreling money away in hollowed-out pigs and working hard. And I think most jobs are utterly pointless anyway. Unless you're a nurse or a bin man, the chances are your job is utterly pointless and does nothing to augment the happiness of humankind.
Well, you can all leave here with sunshine in your hearts. But it is a terrible cycle because older people are more likely to vote and are pandered to at the expense of young people who then feel alienated and so they vote less. So if we do this at this rate, in 30 years' time, we will end up with elections that are decided entirely by half a dozen 90-year-olds.
We're not going to get pensions anyway. It's going on about pensioners, but as you get older, the age when you can retire just moves away from you. It's just like, it's like a kitten with a ball of wool. You just think, oh...
Well, David Cameron disputed claims that these benefits weren't needed. He said, say that to the older woman who can keep warm tonight on this cold February evening. And I thought, it's a bit of a major policy decision for just this one woman.
Who's forgotten to shut the patio doors.
There has to be something the older generation can do to make this up to the younger people, though. I was thinking maybe Judi Dench could build a youth centre out of all her BAFTAs.
Yeah, that's what you should do, is combine things. So people shouldn't have to pay to go to university and old people shouldn't have to pay to get on the bus. Mm. So you can go to university as long as you drop an old person off at the shops first and on the way back. Things like that.
That's
just combine things.
I like that. Synergy. Yes. That's very good.
No, it's quite a dangerous tactic, isn't it, for Cameron to target elderly voters? Because isn't there a very real risk that they'll go into the ballot box and think, now, I came in here for something.
David Cameron has pledged that any future Conservative government would not cut back or means test any existing pensioner benefits. Currently, pensioners enjoy a winter fuel allowance, free bus passes, eye tests, prescriptions, TV licences and the right to tut at loud children on buses and trains. Pensioners are, of course, the age group most likely to vote in an election, as all coach trips always include a toilet break at a polling station. 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Sarah have got 4 points, but so too have Sam and Jeremy. With an advertisement from the notice board of St Andrew's Church in Dibden Purlieu in Hampshire.
1940s themed fete. Celebrate your parish church. Fun for all the family, including a reenactment of the bombing of the church during World War II.
Hard to think of more fun.
Was there a fly passed by the Luftwaffe?
Our thanks to Mark Bowden in South Harrow for sending us that. Sarah, why might we soon all have a good head on our shoulders?
Oh, is this about this doctor? Mm. Yes, this is my favourite story this week because it was like falling into an Escher drawing. This man said that head transplants would be possible really soon. All they need to do is work out how to do head transplants. It's so exciting, guys. Basically, it's all completely possible. All they need to do is work out the actual finite details of doing it, and he wants to make sure of that before working out how to do it. And he used this really wonderful analogy. He said that you don't go to the moon before checking that people are going to follow you. And I thought, no, you don't go to the moon until you've built a rocket. That's more important than a, hey, you on board, guys?
Was that a brilliant bit in the description of it? He said, you know, we figured it all out, and you have to use a very sharp knife to cut through the neck to minimise nerve damage, and then you put it onto the donor body, and the quote was, the next stage is trickier.
Because you've got to get the donor to stand really still so the head doesn't fall off. But can't they just travel into the future and find out how to do it? Because surely people in the future already know. So all they've got to do is build a time machine, go to, like, 5 years hence, and then they'll tell them, and they can come back and
but
do it.
It's been oversold anyway, hasn't it? Because it's not actually a head transplant, it's a body transplant.
Well, which is...
The idea you could transplant someone else's head onto my body and, you know, like... transplant Sandy's head onto my body and I'd be much funnier. But
well, if you're Beckham, say, and you look really good in your pants, but, you know, you struggle to master cutlery, then you'll think, do you know what? I could be a really brainy person who looks good in my pants. And what were the Jehovah's Witnesses? Because you can't even have a blood transfusion.
You can have a new head, you just can't have any blood. Someone I met, he's a heart surgeon. He did heart surgery on a Jehovah's Witness. It took 18 hours because there was no blood transfusion.
And it worked?
Yeah, so it is the blood.
Oh, I thought it's because they kept going from door to door all the time. running after them with this heart. Can you just stop for a minute?
Yeah, yeah.
To have this done, this body transplant, you'd want to know what you're going to look like, right? Do you think they give you one of those children's flip books where you can... Like, I look nice as a lollipop lady with chicken feet. Do you think it'd be...
But we've got all these new technologies whizzing in. I mean, I wonder if maybe you get to a stage where you can have a spare head.
Oh, what, keep it under your arm?
Yeah, Natalie Bennett could have just whipped it on the other day and said, oh, this one, I'm not really functioning today.
What was that film? Was it Mars Attacks, where Sarah Jessica Parker's head was replaced by that of a yappy dog?
She was on a dog, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure that was rooted in science.
According to Italian doctor Sergio Canavero, the first human head transplant could take place in just 2 years should the surgery be approved. The surgery works by putting a head on a donor body. And for those wondering, a donor body is one of those things you see spinning around in a kebab shop. The proposal has caused raised eyebrows, which is also one of the side effects of the procedure. Dr. Canavero said he would expect the patient to be able to move and feel their face when they awoke. He doesn't sound certain, so if you're having it done, keep your receipt. 2 points to Sarah. Andy, who really won't turn the other cheek when it comes to exposing Tennis Girl?
Yeah, this is the story about the famous poster of the Tennis Girl with the bare bottom. And this was a complex story that I struggled to follow. The man who took the photograph always claimed that it was a photograph of his then-girlfriend, but then this other bloke came forward, he said, no, that's my ex-wife. And for me, it was a sad commentary on the passage of time, because I remember that poster in the 70s. It was on many of my fellow students' walls, that image. But this week, when I saw that image in the newspapers, I found myself thinking, that tennis court's in very poor condition.
She's clearly terrible at tennis, right? Her stance is all wrong. She's dropped her balls and her pants have fallen off. I mean, yet she still won the match.
Has this bloke produced any supporting evidence? The thing is, I read the whole story through very carefully, and it just had that ring of the mad bloke in the pub saying, I'll tell you what, my ex-wife, right? She was the model for that. Tennis person.
Yeah.
It's her bum. There's no... I mean, it was just a guy saying that his unnamed ex-wife was... I mean, you might say that to make yourself sound interesting, mightn't you? You know?
But to be honest, the woman pictured could be anybody out on a Friday night in Newcastle. Do you know what I mean?
With a tennis racket.
It does get nasty up there. Yeah.
A man from Cornwall called Peter Atkinson claims the woman in the famous Athena Tennis Girl poster is in fact his ex-wife and not the ex-model Fiona Butler, as everyone has previously believed. He says he has a postcard which predates the poster to prove it. The iconic photograph was taken by Martin Elliott. Since Mr. Elliott's death, the royalties have been paid to his widow, Noelle Bott, which pleasingly translates as Christmas bum. Fiona Butler says she remembers a photo shoot on a tennis court with her knickers off, but then Who hasn't had a bit of fun at the leisure centre with the iPad? So. Miss Butler also says she can remember dressing as a dog and playing poker with several other smoking dogs. Add 2 points to Andy. Sarah, which critter should we be less ratty with, according to Norwegian scientists?
Oh, yes, so this is a study this week. So they've been studying the temperature that was going on in the kind of 14th, 15th, 16th century, and now they think that it wasn't rats that caused the Black Death, the plague, it was gerbils. If I was a gerbil, I would really have thought I'd got away with this. I'd just be hanging around in hutches going, I'm just a family pet, nobody knows, I killed one third of Europe. And bang, they're onto him.
I feel bad for the rats, though, don't you?
I love rats.
No, but we've given them a terrible reputation now.
Oh, not in Paris, they work in a lot of the top restaurants. I've seen a film. I saw a film about
it. You know, in London, you're never, you're never less than 6 foot from a rat. How far are you from a gerbil? I'm slightly... You're never more than 6 foot from a Starbucks, which is another worry. Rats. I've said bad things about rats. It's like when I mistakenly told everyone that Procol Harum were responsible for everything that's going on in Nigeria. This is a very...
I was disappointed about the Germans. I used to think gerbils were these magical, wondrous... I had a sense of childlike wonder for gerbils, because I remember at school, before they had iPads and things like that, we had school gerbils. And I thought they were these miraculous creatures that could transform, because every holiday a child would take the gerbil back home to stay with it over the holidays, and at the beginning of the new term, the gerbil would come back and it would be a bit bigger or a bit smaller or a different colour or female. And I thought they were these amazing magic creatures.
At the risk of sounding ignorant, what is a gerbil?
It's just a foreign rat. They're called the desert rats. That's just our brave boys who basically defeated Rommel by being good at wriggling on their tummies.
They were gerbils.
They were the gerbils, and he was the desert... Rommel was the desert fox, and they were the desert rats.
No, you're confusing it with Joseph Gerbils. According to a new study, gerbils and not rats are now chief suspects for the spread of the Black Death across Europe. Gerbils aren't native to Britain, but arrived from Asia carrying the disease in the 14th century. The disease spread as fleas jumped from the rodents to domestic animals or humans. Wait a minute, why are fleas escaping the blame? Still, they go on and enjoy perfectly good careers as circus performers. Well, there you go. Just because something is small and cute, it doesn't mean you should underestimate it. Applies to gerbils. It's also how I'd like my obituary to open. So. 2 points to Sarah. Sam, why might antiquers be asked loaded questions?
This is very good news for Britain's struggling musket ball making industry, which is that it turns out, I mean, only a couple of weeks ago we were being told that criminals were going to print their own guns using 3D printers, but they've wrong-footed us again. And apparently all these hardened crims, because you don't have to have a weapons licence to carry an antique gun, they're all tooling up with kind of muskets and flintlock pistols and, you know, turning over banks dressed as adamant, basically. So there's this whole thing of trying to clamp down on the idea that antique guns and flintlock pistols and things should be being used by... You just buy them as antiques rather than as guns.
Mm. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
You can imagine a sort of shootout where they're all, like, trying to get my flint to strike. Reload, go round the muzzle end, quick!
And one guy turns up really late dragging a cannon.
That's exactly right.
Hang on, guys! I did a search on Google for antique weapon and a picture of Michael Heseltine.
I had to hand in an antique gun once
did
in
the
police station. Yeah, there was a gun amnesty for reasons I won't bore you with. So I was tasked with handing in a gun at the police station, at Notting Hill police station. I was quite nervous because I was walking through the streets of Notting Hill with a gun in a plastic bag. So I was a little bit outside my comfort zone.
Wait for carnival.
I should. And I went in, so I was quite tense, and I went in and I said, I've got a gun. I'd like to hand it in for the amnesty. And the desk sergeant, he said, yeah, leave it there. That was it. And I walked out.
Did I miss the bit where you got the gun? Where did you get the gun from?
The gun was in my house. It's a long, boring...
Don't ask Sandy. Don't get yourself in trouble. You're out of your depth, girl. You don't want to know. Don't ask questions about things you don't want to get involved with, girl, all right? Here you go, Treacle. Yeah. Go and buy yourself something nice. This is men's business, all right?
And the National Ballistics Intelligence Service have reported that increasing numbers of antique firearms are being used in criminal activities to circumvent our strict gun laws. A gun is considered antique if its ammunition is obsolete, if its firing mechanism has been removed, or if, when you pull the trigger, a flag says bang. And the situation has led to distress for some criminals who are genuinely torn between using granddad's old service revolver to pull a job or taking it on the Antiques Roadshow and potentially meeting Fiona Bruce. Now, you can tell if it's happening in your area because instead of graffiti, gang members record their achievements through tapestries. 2 points to Sam. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
I've got an excerpt from an article on BBC News Online. It's a misprint sent in by Gaz Webber. And it says, armed police were sent to an address in Coventry where a 28-year-old man from Banbury was held on suspicion of possession of an illegal fireman.
Any more?
I've got one from the Valley News sent by Peter Montanez. And it's headlined, Importance of Tax Return Accuracy. Gets better. Here's an example of the importance of accuracy in your tax return. HMRC has returned the tax return to a man in Evesham after he apparently answered one of the questions incorrectly. In response to the question, do you have anyone dependent on you? The man wrote, 2.1 million illegal immigrants, 1.1 million crackheads, 4.4 million unemployable Jeremy Kyle scroungers, 900,000 criminals in over 85 prisons, plus 650 idiots in Parliament and the whole of the European Commission. HMRC stated the response he gave was unacceptable. The man's response to HMRC was, "Who did I miss out?"
Sam and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Andy and Sarah with 13. Before we leave you, here's an extract from the Republic of Ireland census, sent in by Laura Roberts in Kilkenny.
Question 13. How many children have you given birth to? This question is for women only.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Sarah Pascoe, Sam Leith and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Andy Walton, Lucy Clark and James Bug, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch. The producer was Richard Morris.